Hello, I'm your host, Kathy Chester, and welcome to the Move It or Lose It podcast, a podcast about all things that move the mind, body, and soul. The Move It or Lose It podcast is for information, awareness, and inspirational purposes only. I am not a doctor, and I don't even play one on TV. So please consult with your doctor before making any medical decisions. The views expressed by advertisers, guests, or contributors are their opinions and not necessarily the views of the Move It or Lose It podcast. Hey guys, we are back with Robbie from Beneath the Tracksuit and so excited to have him on. I've been stalking him with all his poetry and the beautiful words that he writes. And so I know if you've not heard of him, today's the day. So without further ado, Robbie, I'm very glad to have you on. I'm excited to share your story and your poetry and your book. So thank you so much for coming on with us today.
No, thank you for having me. I've noticed you stalking me and don't worry, I turned up.
Well, thank you. I remember when I asked you, you were like, why? I'm like, why? Like, nobody's asked me that yet. Why do you want to? I'm like, because you're fascinating to me. So that's a big part of why I really enjoy asking different people on the podcast is it's, you know, doctors that inspire me, different people who are working on gadgets to help our life better, and just patients that inspire me to take their autoimmune disease and just do something with it that's inspiring. And I really enjoyed I obviously enjoy your poetry because I can't do that. And I think it's awesome. So I want to learn a little bit more about you. And so before multiple sclerosis, our uninvited visitor came to visit you. What was life like growing up and stuff like that for you?
Growing up, I was just normal, I suppose. I'd like to say normal.
I played like in the United States? In the United States?
No.
You don't UK. Sound like me in the UK, yes.
In the UK. Yeah, no, I grew up loved football, very active, always outside. And that never changed really until my 20s. I carried on and then I went to work. I loved it. I was kitchen fitter. I was really good at it. You could take somebody's tattered kitchen and turn it into something that was just lovely. And I loved it. It was very hands-on. It was brilliant. And then I got MS and then I can't do that anymore.
So what age were you when you were diagnosed?
I always get this wrong, but I think I was 26.
We all do.
I think it's between 25 and 27, around there. It was in 2015, so however old I was then.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you were diagnosed, tell, because I know that's kind of an interesting story. So talk to us about the diagnosis, how that came to be. Were you married then or no?
Yeah.
Okay, so how did she start seeing symptoms first, or did you?
I froze at work. It was weird. I had a stroke. That's what they thought. I was building a kitchen cupboard, and I got stuck.
Okay.
But I was in the room by myself. There was nobody near me, and I was just stuck, leaning over. I was holding a drill, and I was just stuck there for 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. I couldn't move.
In the cabinet?
Like lent on top of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, lent on. I was putting feet on it.
You have no idea the picture I had right then. I was like, you're stuck in the cabinet for 20 minutes and nobody even caught you, knew you were missing. What? I'm glad you got out of that job.
No, I was putting feet on top of the cabinet.
Got it.
And I got stuck there. It was weird. I couldn't move. I had a drill in one hand and I was holding myself on the cupboard with the other hand and I couldn't move. It was just so weird. It was like I'd lost all sensation of my whole body and I was just stuck there. And then I was really scared. I don't know. I thought I was dying. I thought like this ain't right. And then slowly little fingers, movement, arms, neck, head. And I was just fine. I got off and I was just like, what was that? Well, what happened to me? Yeah. So I went home.
How long did that last?
About 15, 20 minutes.
So what I find fascinating is that everything like you couldn't move, but it didn't give out. Like legs didn't give out. It just kind of like froze.
Yeah. Yeah. I was lent on the unit. Yeah. But nobody came in either. I'm in a busy building site and nobody came in. No one saw me. No one found me.
Were you afraid that someone would find you, or did you not want to? How did you
feel? I was scared I was going to die.
I mean, did you want someone to come and help you, or were you like, I don't want anyone to see me?
No, I'd have been grateful if somebody would have come in, because maybe there could have been a different the dynamic of what was happening. I don't know, but I just couldn't move.
So then you started to be able to move little bits at a time, like the extremities.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was.
Feel like you could then move your legs?
Yeah. Yeah. And then everything, and I was absolutely fine. It was just weird. There was just nothing the matter with me anymore. So I went home. I went home and I booked an appointment with the doctors. I went straight to the doctors and they're like, give me an ECG and blood tests. And there was like, there's nothing the matter with you pretty much. And I was like, but this happened. And then they sent me off for an ultrasound of the neck because they thought I had a stroke. And then I didn't have a stroke. Then they give you all the MS tests then. Right. Okay, it could be this. So lumbar puncher.
Right. Yes, who does
nobody's favorite? Nobody's favorite, that one. Lumbar puncher, MRI scans. So they scanned me and they found one scar, plaque,
which
on the
is
brain.
Multiple.
Yeah, and then they scanned me again 6 months later, and then there was more.
Okay.
And then so they came to the conclusion that I had MS, and that was, I got MS. Right, thank you very much.
So in between that time where you had one and then you had six, what was going on in your body in between that time?
Well, I kept rolling. My hands would roll like this. They would roll, and my left hand in particular, my left side of my body is worse than my right.
Me too. We must be best friends.
Yeah.
I have the same. My left side is like, I'm always like, come on, jerk, go.
Yeah, no, it doesn't like it. I've got drop foot in my left foot as well, and it's this kind of, everything's on the left hand side. But the right side is still rough. It's just the left side's really rough. But in that time, I would get dizzy a lot in between the 6 months and the gap. I'd get dizzy a lot. I'd get tired a lot. I wouldn't know. I'd get these headaches as well. It'd be like, just be like that. Just really sudden. Just like. And it would really hurt, and it'd be crippling. I'd be like on the floor sort of thing. It'd just be horrendous. And and then after they give me the second MRI, they're going, oh yeah, you've got MS. Okay, that's great. Thank you. Yeah.
I always wanted. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a present. Thank you. We decided to move. So we moved from one side of the country to the other side of the country to be closer to my family. Uh-huh. Because if I've got MS and I'm going to get really sick, then it'd be nice to have support near me. And when I got here, they said, yeah, your symptoms don't actually run typical with MS. I had that a lot because nothing stuck. Everything was intermittent. Like I froze like I had a stroke and I was fine 5 minutes later. And then my hands would curl shut, and then I'm fine later. And these headaches would come and they would go, and I'd be fine later as well. So nobody was like, this isn't an MS relapse because it hasn't lasted for more than 28 days and then gone back down and things like that. And they were saying, so you're very atypical. So they took it away from me and they said, you might have vasculitis, or you might have, there was some other brain disorders that they said. And so then they gave me another lumbar puncture and then two more MRI scans. But the second MRI scan was really not good to say, but I was with an MS nurse and we was talking, and she was, oh, you haven't had your results of your scans, she said. And she got it up on her computer next to me, and I got real-time looks when she's telling me, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. And then, but the real-time look of the scan on her face was like, so I got to see that for real, and she was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, it's actually not fine. There's like lots of like light bulbs all over here. So
right.
And then they said, yeah, okay, you've definitely got MS. It's definitive.
So I remember my favorite neurologist that I ever had here in the States, because that's the only place I've ever lived. He would go over my MRIs with me. So he would sit down and go over them with me, which I always appreciated, because then I could see like what was going on. So I always appreciated that learning experience of what I could see. And what I don't like now is when they just like tell me, oh, it's this, this, and this. And I'm like, can we sit down and go over it together? So I don't know that like you, I would have wanted that the very first time. It probably would have freaked me out. But do you have that now? Like when you get an MRI, will they go over it with you?
Yeah, they go over. I have the scan, and then it's like a few weeks later I get called into the neurologist. And okay. my last three MRIs have been fine. There's been no new lesions. Obviously, I've got these lovely shadows everywhere.
Right.
Some are big and some are small. But there's no new lesions over the last 3 years.
Okay.
But I feel myself getting worse. You can have this conversation with your neurologist that hasn't got MS, and he can say, oh no, you're fine. And I can say, no, well, I'm not, because right. this is getting weaker, my brain fog's getting worse, I'm not as right. strong as this. And he can go, oh no, you're fine. And I can go, well, I'm really, really not.
Right. Because they read the MRI and then they're like, no, the MRI looks like this. And I think for some of us, I call that a lot of times when I'm working with new clients, new patients, I'm like, if your neurologist is only looking at your MRI and not looking at you, then that may be a time that you either have a sit down with them, or it may be time to look for a new neurologist, because you need your neurologist to be looking at you and you conversing about, okay, the MRI looks like this, but I'm sliding. I'm feeling this, this, and this. Cognitively, things aren't working correctly for me. My insomnia is this. My whatever is this. And I've always felt like if they're not hearing you, then it's time to say bye. Are you battling a chronic illness like multiple sclerosis and know it's time to add exercise program and movement to your body in order for you to have the best health and independence for you? I am so excited to announce the launch of my new program, Damn It, a disrupt, move, and transform program for us autoimmune warriors with a trainer who really gets it, me. You can participate in either virtual one-on-one training, virtual group training, or both. To find out more on how you or loved one can benefit from this training, email me, msdisrupted@gmail.com. Message me on Facebook or Instagram at msdisrupted. Look at the website, msdisrupted.com. Take a look. Can't wait to see your face. So you get the MRI, you see the lesions, she looks at it and says, okay, this is MS. So now we're back from having it, not having it, to now you have it. And they know that they know that they know you have it. So then they give you the special gifts of here's all your DMTs. So then what?
I said to my MS nurse at the time, I said, I'll take whatever you want to give me. I want you to give me my best shot. Let's go with my best shot. I think I was 28. I said, I really don't want to end up in a wheelchair. I really don't want to be using a scooter. I really don't want this to happen. So I think I was 27. And she's like, okay, well, ocrelizumab, no. Alemtuzumab, Lemtrada.
Lemtrada.
That was hard. They're really hard to learn the names. Yeah. I went on Lemtrada first, and I had the first round of 5 rounds, and then the second round a year later of 3 rounds. And then a year and a half after that, I relapsed really, really hard. Mm. I had lots of new lesions, some on the spinal cord and some more in the brain, and then others just lit up like they used to. And it was weird. I was just walking home one day and I just started dragging my foot across the floor. I was wearing like really, really cool trainers at the time. So I took my left foot trainer off, and I was just dragging my foot all the way home. And I didn't get it. And
right.
then it just got worse as the days went on. I was losing my balance and I couldn't lift my left foot. And then And then things like this, my hand was curling shut. I love this one when it just curls shut and it just stays there for a little bit. It's well annoying. But yeah, and all of this was just happening. And so balance was gone, more fatigue, and it just stayed there. And I text my neurologist and MS nurse and put a smiley face at the end of the message, because I quite like my MS nurse. I think we quite sound together. But my neurologist sort of took that as a sign that I was absolutely fine.
The frustration.
Nobody sort of took it too seriously. But and then when they did and they got the scans and they're like, oh, fuck, you need to be back on DMTs. And they offered me Lemtrada and I said, no, that was horrific and it didn't work. I didn't like it and it didn't work. It made me feel really ill.
How was it with your stomach? Did it really shred your stomach too?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I just remember I felt really ill for like 2 weeks afterwards, because obviously it sucks your immune system out, doesn't it? And then gives you a brand new one, sort of like what chemotherapy does, but not as intense.
I know that I'm going to say I'm wrong now. It starts with a T. I'll get it right at the end of this. But I know that's one that was offered to me. And I was like, everybody that I've ever interviewed, talked to, Tecfidera has just shredded their stomach. I mean, just left with the worst stomach issues. And I'm like, Tecfidera, I'm like, I'm going to say no thank you to that one. I mean, it shows you how much research you really have to do, you know, for these. Mm-hmm. So then you got off that one. And then what was the next one you got on?
Ocrevus.
Oh, that's what I'm on. How is that doing for you?
I don't mind it. Okay. I go and every 6 months I go there and I have a day in the hospital and then I come back and it makes me feel a bit ropey. Sometimes I feel a bit rough the next few days, and sometimes I'm like high from the steroids. I know it's only low dose of steroids, but I have like insomnia for the next week or so. But I haven't relapsed since I've been on Ocrevus.
Good.
But I've been getting worse. And then this is where me and the neurologist are talking of disease progression, where maybe I've got inflammation that they can't see on the scans.
Uh-huh.
So maybe things like that. They did offer me a third lumbar puncture 2 months ago, but I said no. I couldn't do it because they make you feel really ill. And yeah, I feel sorry for anybody who has to go and have one, because they are awful.
And honestly, Robbie, I would want like a lot more proof as to what it is that they would find in that, because what they really need are stronger MRI machines. The lumbar puncture, they've already done. They're not going to find anything unless there's a neurologist that could show me more of that. Any neurologist I've spoken to, there's nothing more they could see on that. The one thing that they're working on are stronger MRI machines to be able to view what it is they can't see right now. And I'm with you on the Ocrevus because I switched to that. And it's been about 2.5 years and I'm really struggling on that. It's keeping me from relapsing, but I do feel like cognitively I'm worse. I'm worse physically. I can't do as much as I could do. So it's a real strange balance. I was on Tysabri for many years and did great on that. And now with Ocrevus, I just don't do as well. And so same, like the alternatives that they give me, I'm just like, no. So I'm just kind of waiting and seeing and really researching a lot of my own. And this is what I love, Robbie, and I hope that you're getting this too, is really the community for us is reaching out to the right people. And I don't mean the influencers on Instagram, but the people that can really help you understand, like, okay, what are the symptoms of this? You know, what are the drawbacks of getting on this? Some of them, I feel like you get a good idea of what they do to most of our other MSers. And others, other of them, like you can have 20 people and 10 people do amazing on Ocrevus. Other, like 5 people would never touch it again. And the other 5 would say, okay, not the best, but okay. So it's so different for our bodies. But I always try to gauge from, like, if I have 30 people I know on podcasts, and like, let's say Tech Federa, and 25 of them have had their stomachs just shredded from it. Probably I'm not going to go with that one. So I try to like, just kind of go with that, if that helps at all.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. But until I was on the Aquaverse, I never was in part of the MS communities to say. I was part of one group, and then I sort of, the leader of the group, we didn't get on so well, and then she kicked me out of the group, and then I wasn't on any. And I sort of turned my back on the whole Facebook, Instagram community thing. I didn't want to, because yeah, I was quite invested into this group. I'd made friends there, and then I wasn't in there anymore, and so I'd sort of given up.
Yeah.
And then I started to reach back out when I got on Aquaverse, and the friends I've made now are fantastic. I pick up my phones most mornings, and I have a message from my friend in California, and I'm living in my corner of the UK, and we message through the time zone. I message him when he's in bed, and then he messages me back when I'm in bed. But I have lots of friends now all over the planet, because
that's awesome. Because of me.
We have like a tight knit community, and it's nice to be part of it.
It is really cool. I always tell people that if they could understand like what we have, once you find your tribe, it's like, I know that I have people all around the world, like you're saying, that I could call at any time and say, I'm just really, really needing to talk. And where even my husband, as much as he loves me and wants to get it, you don't get it till you get it, right? And so I can say, like, I don't know why one side of my body is freezing, the other side is hot. I can't walk. I can't stop crying. I'm pissed off. I don't know what's wrong. And they get it. I don't have to say anymore. Yeah. And they can just walk me through it, either let me cry, let me scream, but they get what it is that we're getting. But when you find those people who are like you, and it just feels so much better. And so much less isolating, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is.
So now you found those people. Is that a different support group that's online for you, or just people that you found?
I've found people from different support groups. When I started sharing my poetry, I was trying to see how far I could get it. So I started my page, and I just said to myself, if I could get as many friends as followers as I've got friends, which was 150 at the time, and I said, I'd be happy with that, because then people are reading and they're understanding what I'm going through. And it quickly grew to thousands, and it's more than 6,000 now. But the further I was sharing, I made closer connections with some of the people that were reading it, from all different groups and all different countries.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, because so there's always somebody awake to listen. As well, it can be 3 o'clock in the morning for me, and 2 o'clock in the afternoon for someone else. I phoned someone at 3 o'clock in the afternoon the other day, and it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, it was like 8 o'clock in the morning for them. I'd woke them up. I completely forgot. But it's because now there's always somebody available for me to talk to.
Right.
But we all, like you said, we all understand. We all understand the things that we're going through. And it's amazing, because there's some things that I can talk to some of my friends about that my wife can't understand.
Mm-hmm.
She does try her best. She's my biggest support. She's absolutely
brilliant.
But again, you don't quite get it till you get it.
And I think, Robbie, would you agree that when they really love us, like, I know my husband gets it when I'm like, I'm just going to talk to some of my MS peeps. He never looks at me like, well, I can help. I mean, he gets it when I just need to go vent out to them. He never feels like he missed the mark on something.
Yeah. No, I have, I think, two or three different groups that I go to do calls like this, and she completely gets it. She completely gets it. Go and have your MS man's chat. Go and do this chat. She completely gets it, because it helps me feel it a little bit less crazy. Because before I started reaching out, and before I started writing, I was so depressed.
Yeah.
I was so depressed. I didn't know anything. Nobody knew anything. Nobody could tell me nothing, because nobody got it. Nobody understood. So all I had was what Google told me. Why is my skin burning? Why is why is my oh, I can't lift my foot, why am I so weak today? Right. So Google had answers that they're not the right answers, because that's just a textbook reading back to me, is where people actually understand, and they can say, yeah, I did that, I have that, I have this, and I can be the person now that go, yeah, I understand what you're going through, this is what it can be. And so as well as people helping me, I'm helping people, and it's great. And
I'm really impressed too that you stuck with it, because I remember, like, back in the day, so I was diagnosed in my 20s, and so you were what, 26?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so about I was diagnosed with rheumatoid first, and then MS. So when I was diagnosed, there was no, you know, it was snail mail. There was no, like, Instagram. We just hid it. No one said anything about it. You definitely did not talk about it with your job or anything like that. And you never talked about it in school stuff with my kids, because you were terrified, like, you'd get your kids taken away. And so we just didn't share. And the first support group I went to, I always tell the story, I have no idea what moron set this up, but it was in, like, a wheelchair shop, like a scooter shop. So, like, you looked over and there were all these wheelchairs, and here you are, newly diagnosed, terrified, like, I'm going to be in one of those. So I was like booking it out of there. So, I mean, it's so different now that you've got so much support and there's people that you can gel with. But what I respect about you is that when it got negative, you were like, out. Like, I don't need this. I'm already feeling depressed. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Move It or Lose It podcast, where you can again find us wherever you like your podcast, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. Join us on that. And we can't wait to see you again. We're going to have a lot of exciting guests and working together. And as always, you'll hear us say at the end of every podcast, we are stronger together. So let's do it. Let's become stronger together. Have a great day. Hey!